Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, here to meet your urgent and emergent medical needs, whether they are COVID-19 related or not. Medical emergencies happen when you least expect them. Whether it's a stroke, heart attack, illness, or injury, San Juan Regional Medical Center's caregivers are here to provide care to you and your loved ones. Find out more online at sanjuanregional.com. Minutes past 8 o'clock. It is Wednesday morning, July the 14th. It's Bastille Day, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air, of course, here in San Juan County, New Mexico. 103.3 FM over the air in Durango, Colorado, and streaming everywhere on earth, including France, from KSJE.com. Welcome also to our viewers who are watching us live this morning on our visual radio platforms, the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. We're glad that you are with us this morning, everybody. Coming up in the next few moments, our topic is healthcare today. My guest is a local endocrinologist, Dr. Kathleen Collarin, is going to be joining me from San Juan Health Partners. Coming up in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Then later on this morning, Dr. Mike Hadabaugh will be here with some more good words of advice from the Encouragement Lab. You'll hear that this morning at 8:50 a.m. on the radio station. And then next hour, of course, at 9:06 after the news, it's Roving with the Yards. Mick Hess will be here with our classical music program. Mick is playing more music today from Shostakovich. You'll hear some selections coming up at 9:06, a special 90-minute version of Roving with the Yards on Wednesdays, of course, because that'll take us to 10:30 and right on Four Corners, our local and regional author program with Tracy Hales Vass. Today, Tracy is speaking with author Stephen Steele about his latest book called The Canister Factor. More on that coming up today at 10:30 right here on KSJE. Don't forget, of course, you can also connect with us on our Instagram page as well. And let's talk about the weather forecast. We have a flash flood watch in effect until tomorrow. We're expecting some areas of heavy rain today in the region. Outside right now, it's mostly cloudy in Farmington, temperature 68 degrees. And we're expecting a cooler day today with a high of only near 80 degrees, again, with a good chance of storms, maybe some heavy rain at times. 62 overnight. Tomorrow, a chance of storms again. 90 degrees for a high on Thursday, warming back up to 91 on Friday, lower 90s again Saturday and Sunday and Monday. And again, that chance of storms is in the forecast for the next several days. Overnight lows, as you can see, in the mid to upper 60s. Well, let me introduce my guest who is here with me this morning, as I mentioned, local endocrinologist. And she is one of the very few endocrinologists in the region. In fact, the only one in the region, the closest other endocrinologist is in Albuquerque, and so we think. And so that's really interesting to me, and we'll talk more about that in just a moment. But Dr. Kathleen Collarin is here from San Juan Health Partners. Good morning, and welcome to KSJE.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here, and welcome to Farmington. You are relatively new to our community.
Yes, 6 weeks.
6 weeks, and they put you on the radio. Somebody owes you lunch.
I think they wanted to do it before I became stressed.
There you go. Well, hopefully this doesn't add to your stress. I hope not. But it's great to have you here. As I mentioned, your specialty is somewhat unique in the region. You are the only endocrinologist within 200 miles, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so congratulations and thank you for coming to our community with your profession. And we'll talk a bit more about what that means. And you worked for a while in Albuquerque and in Santa Fe and went to school in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Got you. And so, but you've been in New Mexico for a number of years.
Since 1991.
Got you. Very good. So, well, welcome. So when we talk about endocrinology, we are talking about what types of things?
So, endocrinology is the study of hormones and glands.
Okay.
Clinically, it is really about diabetes, both type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, metabolic disorders, including obesity, thyroid problems, a variety of other problems, including osteoporosis, pituitary, adrenal, parathyroid, the list goes on and on and on.
Right.
And then we also, endocrinologists, specialize in transgender care.
Got you. And so when we talk about those types of things, we know we have a very high prevalence of diabetes in our area. And so that is sometimes a little bit challenging, I guess, for patients to control.
Yes, it is. And that's because it involves lots of different processes, not just what you eat, it's how you eat, it's how you exercise, it's your genetics, lots of different things.
All those things kind of go into it. And I always have heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there are many folks maybe at pre-diabetic status, and they can help to reverse that a little bit. But once they get into diabetes, it's very hard to reverse that, but to can just control it once you're full-blown diabetes. Is that accurate?
So nothing's impossible.
Okay.
A lot of, well, often, not a lot, often patients get diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. If they're hospitalized for some reason, it gets diagnosed. They go home on a whole bunch of new medications, and motivated people, really motivated people, can make the lifestyle changes to come off of those medications. And they don't go back to normal. They always have diabetes, but they're controlling it with lifestyle
Got you.
versus adding medications.
Right.
It is
Understood.
a progressive disease, so over time, if we all lived long enough, we'd probably all be diabetic. My
Right.
104-year-old grandmother is still waiting,
Wow. Good for her.
though.
Well, that's amazing. But that just tells you just how kind of complicated some of these things are. And as you talk about some of the things that you deal with, and it seems like the study of these glands and things you were talking about, those are also very challenging, right? When there's something maybe goes a little bit wrong with a pituitary gland or something, to try to figure out what's causing the problem and helping the patient.
Yes, endocrinology is definitely a problem-solving field or an investigative field. Fortunately, for many disorders of the endocrine system, we have appropriate treatments and we can get patients back to normal and feeling well. With diabetes, it's a kind of a different ball game.
Right. That's got a lot of other, as you mentioned, other more complicated, maybe even hereditary things involved with that
Yeah,
too.
absolutely.
So that's what we're
Yeah.
talking about. You mentioned transgender care, and I wanted to ask you a bit more about that because I think that's an interesting field and an interesting way to help people as well. We hear a lot of folks who are transgender who maybe are working with their doctors to try to understand what's going on and get help from the medical community. So talk to me a bit more about the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. So, as an endocrinologist, I mostly deal with hormone therapy. So, transgender patients need the proper hormones
Right.
to function in their gender. And so, that's the main role of an endocrinologist. In children, we can actually provide medication that pauses puberty, so that they don't grow into the sex they were born into, but stay neutral for a period of time until they can make better decisions on their own or to just let some time pass so everybody can get involved. And in the meantime, it prevents them from developing into the wrong gender for them.
Right. So I guess if a child is feeling conflicted or having some issues with their gender identity, this is what you're talking about. And I guess with their parents' advice and with them and all those types of things, they can have a consultation with you.
Yeah, mostly the parents are conflicted,
I
and
see.
society, but
Right.
usually the kids know, and they know very early on. And if you're paying attention, you can see the cues to that.
Right. But there is help available, which is an
Yes.
important thing, and local help available because you're here
Yes.
at Salmon Health Partners, which is, I think, an incredible thing. And so I think for families who are maybe wondering what they can do, coming to see you might be an option.
Yes, absolutely.
For these families and things along that line. And is this something that we're learning more and more about with some of these transgender treatments for hormones and things along that, or is that science pretty much established?
No, it's always ongoing. We're learning new information, learning about new and alternate ways to do therapy, and learning. And more people, as we have more treatment options, more people are coming to the facilities to see people, whereas before it's a very disenfranchised population. People have strong opinions. There are a lot of providers who will not provide care based on their opinions. And so the fact that it's being talked about more and more allows people to really come out and find and get information and get treatment.
Right. And I would think for children who are maybe dealing with this, and you said that a lot of times children know, it's mom and dad who maybe are a little slow to the uptick sometimes, coming forward or seeking treatment is probably a major, major step for these children to even ask mom and dad to say, look, I think, you know, this is the way I want to go. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned so much from my pre-pubertal kids than I think I ever provide back. So it's been a really wonderful journey.
Right. But that's really important. And of course, kids anyway are dealing with puberty and feelings and emotions and all these other things that are going on just as in the normal realm of a teenager anyway.
Absolutely.
And so this is just kind of additional.
Yeah.
Additional stuff.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of mental health issues associated with it, particularly depression.
Sure.
And there's a very high suicide rate in untreated people.
Very true. Very true. My guest this morning, Dr. Kathleen Collarin, is here. She is an endocrinologist at San Juan Health Partners Internal Medicine and Specialty Services. She has been in the area for a few weeks and is starting her practice and dealing with all different kinds of areas. We talked about diabetes, but thyroid and other things, too. That's another thing that I think can cause some challenges for patients that have a problem with their thyroid, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the thyroid can be either overactive or underactive, or there can be growths on the thyroid. So a whole spectrum of things.
Right. And there are different treatment options available. Of course, I don't want to ask you about specific cases, of course, and each case is unique. But
yeah.
For a thyroid problem, it's not just removing it, there are other treatment options as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. So for an underactive thyroid, the treatment is thyroid hormone replacement. So
uh-huh.
It's a pill a day.
Okay.
95% of the time we get it right. 4%, it's a little challenging, and patients, we need to do a lot of tweaking of medications. And then for 1% of people, it just seems they always struggle, and we don't have the absolute right dose for them because we are not a thyroid.
Gotcha. And the thyroid, remind us what the thyroid does in our bodies.
Sure. So the thyroid's involved in everything.
Okay.
But the main things are temperature regulation, metabolism, heart and blood pressure, energy, growth and development, puberty, a reproductive system, just a whole lot of things.
Man, it's got its hands in everything, doesn't
uh-huh.
it? It really does. And so if it gets out of whack, that could cause some major problems, I suppose.
Exactly. It can affect all those systems adversely.
Got you. And is it sometimes hard to diagnose, maybe, because it's affecting so many different things, and maybe you think it's something else when, in fact, it's this little gland doing all these little things?
So, again, for probably 95% of people, it's not that hard to diagnose. It's simply blood tests. And then depending on what they show, you either do further blood tests or imaging studies or just start treatment.
Right. Gotcha. So it's fairly straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Understood. You mentioned metabolism as well, which is another thing that I am seeing as I get a little older and wider. I blame it on metabolism. It's probably something else like the snacks that I eat all the time. But I imagine as we do get older, isn't that one of the things that does slow down a little bit?
So there's, at varying times in life, our metabolism either revs up or slows down. During puberty, it revs up. After menopause in women, it slows way down. And then as we age, it slows down as well. So the problem is that we usually don't slow down our eating.
Right.
So then
Exhibit A.
Well, I'd say 50. plus 5 or minus 5.
Okay. Very good. But that is something that's just, that's a natural thing, right?
It is so, a natural thing.
So it's hard to necessarily control that or try to speed it back up, right?
It is hard to, yeah, you can't really speed it back up unless you do things like physical activity.
That's
going to rev up your metabolism. The muscles need the calories to work. So the more active you are, the more calories that you're burning, and the more you can eat.
Gotcha. Makes sense, without getting bigger.
Yes.
Wrong way.
Yes.
Right. Understood. And so in your practice then, dealing with metabolism problems, what would that be? If it's a normal occurring thing, is it sometimes a little out of whack then at different times, or it's slowing down too early, or what brings you into the picture?
Yeah, so mostly it's not slowing down too early. It's that we're not compensating for the slowing down, and then obesity develops, and then prediabetes develops, and then the whole thing goes whammy.
Right, if we're not careful.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So understood. That does make sense to me. The other thing, cholesterol too, this is along the same lines, I suppose, right?
Exactly, yes.
And so with high blood pressure and cholesterol, this is what adds to other health problems.
Yes. There's a condition called the cardiometabolic syndrome, and it consists of problems with lipids, problems with blood pressure, enlarged waist circumference, prediabetes or diabetes. And it mild forms of all of these things compound each other and lead to heart disease.
Right. And I know, and sometimes I'm, I think, guilty of talking about in this way that, you know, patients usually are don't always suffer from just one problem. They usually present with multiple issues, and they're usually interrelated, as we're talking about this morning. And so I would imagine for folks like yourself, it's a challenge to try to identify all those different things maybe outside your specialty and bringing other doctors in to help figure out the overall picture of a patient's health.
Yeah, it is difficult sometimes, and there's many components to it. Unfortunately, it usually requires many medications, and I don't like to put people on medications, but I realize and recognize the health benefit, and some people struggle, and they can't make a lot of changes in their lifestyle in order to prevent or slow down these processes.
Right. And in your practice, and I guess for many of the things that we're talking about, is the diagnosis or is the treatment just a form of medication? Is there some surgical options at some point? I mean, I imagine there are different levels of treatment as well, and mm-hmm. the patient is always given options as to how to proceed.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a big obesity problem, no pun intended, in the world.
Right.
But certainly we're leading the way in this country. And in this area, there is a lot of obesity, more than the average amount.
We're above average in a bad way.
It's a big problem. And it leads to early death, premature death, immobility, decreased quality of life, multiple medications. An awesome treatment is bariatric surgery. It's gotten more and more popular and more needed. And bariatric surgery, which is where they either shorten the stomach or reroute the food, results in significant amount of weight loss. A lot of people who have been on insulin for years come off of insulin, their diabetes goes away. Their hypertension gets better. Everything gets better.
Hmm. And is this what we would hear referred to maybe as stomach stapling or something like that, or is that a different procedure?
No, that's a part of it.
Okay.
Usually use that term anymore.
I'm sorry.
We have all these fancy words.
Right,
now.
I understand.
But yes.
Okay.
Basically. And what you're doing is shrinking the stomach so that you feel full faster and don't eat as much.
Got it. That
and
makes sense.
If you overeat, it's not comfortable.
Right.
There are medications that can do very similar things, but not to that extent.
Right. And as you said, the results of that have shown great progress and potential for the patients who've been suffering from weight problems. I think there's some very well-known celebrities who've gone through this and have had some very dramatic results. Mm-hmm. And they're very happy to share that usually with the public when it's positive. So it's interesting to see. But that's one of the treatments. But I guess a lot of other things that you were mentioning, maybe there are some pills or other less surgical treatments.
Yeah, there are some medications, particularly in a class of medications called GLP-1 agonists. Glucagon-like peptide agonist. Glucagon is another hormone. These medications are usually injections that are done once a day or once a week. There is one pill form, but they do very similar things. They slow the stomach emptying so that you feel full faster. Mm-hmm. You can't say that three times fast.
No.
They tell your body to make insulin when it's needed and to not make glucose when it's not needed.
I see.
And people lose weight, their diabetes improves, and they do pretty well.
Interesting. And so a lot of these things, these treatments, have they been improving recently? Are these some more modern techniques, whereas maybe 10 years ago you wouldn't have all these resources at your disposal as a physician?
Yeah, 10 years ago, I'm going to go 15 years ago, we probably only had a couple of options to treat diabetes, but the area has exploded. And now there's multiple options that all work by different mechanisms, so they can get added to each other. And so it's really fascinating.
Right, I would think so. And as I mentioned,
it's hard.
Yes, and this is why we appreciate professionals like yourself and to keep track of all these things. But as I mentioned too, when you have a patient that's got a lot of different problems or concerns presenting to you, and then coming up with treatments, I imagine part of this too is to figure out, you know, this medication won't interact badly with this medication for treating this problem over here, and you want to make sure, obviously, that the patient is going to be better with all these different things that maybe you're trying to treat them for.
Absolutely, and I would say the one benefit of the electronic medical record is that they do pharmacy interactions for you. So you put in the medication you want to prescribe and it does a search to determine if it's going to interact with other medications they're on or if you need to adjust doses, et cetera.
And it does it fairly quickly, right? If not immediately.
On demand.
There's some blinking thing that happened on some tablet somewhere, right?
So bright red screen.
Right. Something's got to happen, but that's interesting. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, too, is your work with patients with osteoporosis, because that's another big problem as our population is aging, right? We see
Absolutely.
That a lot in our senior population.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're going to see more of that because of a lot of reasons. One, physical activity is very important for bone health.
Right.
And so there's less physical activity going on, so there's more of a problem. Vitamin D, which isn't really a vitamin, it's a hormone, is involved. And so there's a lot less drinking of milk for other options. And as the air gets more polluted, there's less sunlight, and we need sunlight to convert cholesterol into vitamin D in our skin.
Hmm.
So there's a lot more vitamin D deficiency, both nutritional and from the sun. And so those two things limit how much bone you're going to develop and how quickly you're going to lose bone.
Right. And as we age, don't we all lose some bone density or bone health?
Absolutely. So we peak, our peak for bone mass is about age 33, and then it slowly starts to go down. In women, during menopause, it goes down very rapidly, but then after about 5 years, goes down to its regular rate.
I see.
In men, it just sort of goes down gradually. So there's less osteoporosis in men, but there is osteoporosis in men.
Right. And really the treatment or just staying active, I guess, is probably the easiest way, if you can. And it also helps with a lot of other things we've been talking about this morning, too. But if you don't have that option or what have you, what are some of the things that you can do for folks?
So once the bone is gone, it's hard to build it back. And so the initial goal is to prevent further loss. And that can be done by increasing activity, specifically walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best thing you can do. If you have low vitamin D levels, you can take vitamin D. You can make sure you get enough calcium in your diet, 1,200 milligrams a day. And then there are medications if it's severe enough.
Got you. But walking is a pretty good activity.
Walking's good for everything.
For lots of things.
Yes,
everything.
Everything.
Good. Good to know. And
just go.
Right. And pretty much all ages, too, I would say, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's something that most of us can do. Obviously, if you have mobility problems, that's an issue. But even some walking is better than none if you're able to still move around.
Yes.
And that's an important thing to say. And for the elderly that have this osteoporosis, we kind of see the older folks are bent over or they're kind of hunched over. That's all part of this problem, isn't it?
Yes. The being hunched over means that your vertebrae or your spine, there's been multiple fractures, and so the spine gets crunched. And as a result, you start to bend forward because that's where gravity is.
Right. Understood. Or it's more comfortable, I guess, for you in that position than,
yeah,
than straight
and
up if you can't sit straight up anymore.
Straighten up anymore, right.
Gotcha. My mother was a big posture person, so I was told from an
tell.
Early age. Well, I don't know. I'm a little slouchy today, but thank you. But yeah, it's an important thing, and I think we see a lot of folks maybe who didn't do that early on, and as they get older, they do kind of develop some of these things.
Yeah,
I would think.
So, and older people who develop hip fractures or spine fractures do not do well.
Right.
There's a high mortality rate from a hip fracture, about 30%. Hospitalization mortality is also about 30%. A significant number of people don't go back to independent living. And so it is a big deal.
Right. And that really is one of those things that really does affect mobility, which then adds to a lot of other cascade of potential problems, right?
Exactly.
Because then you're not moving as much, you're gaining weight, you're having other health problems perhaps because of this just one little incident with a hip fracture or what have you.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. And if it doesn't heal correctly, all those different things.
Mm-hmm.
Got you. And so we have a couple of minutes remaining this morning, but tell me a little bit about what folks can do today, besides walking more, but what would you suggest for folks that maybe are listening to us or watching us this morning that maybe they're listening and want to know how to maybe keep diabetes at bay and how to keep active and avoid some of these things?
So that's a great question. And diabetes is a team sport, so it involves lots of people being involved. And of course, the main driver is the patient or the person. Family is really important, the community that you live in, and of course the medical system, but they should be last. So be doing more activities as a family. The kids get to do more exercise, the parents get to do it as well. It's bonding time, so that's good for mental health. And it's just a great way to be together.
Right.
Physical activity is really important. And what the American Diabetes Association says is 30 minutes of brisk walking at least 5 times a week. That's nowhere near sufficient.
So, right. That's the bare minimum, probably,
that's
right?
That's the bare minimum. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's walking at a pretty brisk pace.
Right.
You shouldn't be able to whistle, sing, or have a in-depth conversation while you're doing this walking. Any form of physical activity helps, though.
Right.
And so you can make folding the clothes physically active by standing up, bending down. I mean, you can do this in your daily life, incorporate things that just make you move more.
Right. Well, and I recall your colleagues from the cardiology department telling me that if I go to the mall and park way out at the end of the parking lot and walk into the mall and walk around the mall and do my walking and shopping and what have you, that is one way just to add more walking to my day.
Absolutely. So I would say park as far away as you can. It's not going to take you any more time to get there, you know, maybe 5, 1, 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people to leave your wallet in the car. Get to the mall, walk around, do your window shopping, see what you want to get, and if there's anything, you go back to the car and get your wallet. You
okay.
can do the same thing at the grocery store.
Right.
Hopefully not when it's busy, but you can walk the aisles without shopping.
Right.
And then go get your wallet and go shop. So you've gotten a little bit of exercise, and you get to get your chore done.
And you've enjoyed the air conditioning.
Yes.
These last few days, yes.
Super Walmarts are great for that.
Right, indeed.
But I would definitely leave your wallet at home.
Right, right. Interesting. Very good. And that's just one way to do it. But as you mention. There are places in our everyday lives where if we just were a little thinking out of the box, we could probably come up with some other active tasks that we normally do anyway.
Exactly. Stirring gravy. You can get your hips involved.
I suppose that's true.
Dancing is a great exercise.
Right.
Even if it's by yourself in front of the TV, it's a great thing and it feels good.
Very true.
And then diet is a big part. And dietary habits are hard to change. And I like to use the portion control. Just get one plate. In fact, if we make it a dessert plate, instead of the new big plate, you fill it up as much as you can and you eat that and only that.
And that's it.
And then, and then if you wait 15 minutes before you even think about getting more, you'll find out that you're probably full.
Right.
And so you don't need to go back. And even if you eat junk, fast food all day long, if you eat half of the fast food all day long, you're going to do better.
Okay.
It doesn't really work to tell people don't eat fast food because sometimes it's a necessary thing.
Sure.
And so just share a meal, don't supersize or whatever the equivalent is at other fast food places. Just one small, simple thing, and then you're probably going to be good to go.
Right. And do another walk around the mall.
Yeah. There are lots of diets out there, and they do work. They all work.
Mm-hmm.
And they work because somehow they restrict your calories.
Right.
And they all stop working when you stop doing them because you no longer restrict your calories.
Gotcha.
And so that's why diets fail.
Interesting. But it's funny to me that some diets affect, some people do better with some diets than other diets. And is that just because of their makeup and what their body is prone to react for and against, I suppose?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And you got to find the right one, I guess.
Yeah.
To get the right effect and result.
Yeah, the keto diet is very popular. It's highly protein-based.
Mm-hmm.
It's very effective. And it does improve blood sugar control. A lot of diabetologists, which are endocrinologists who like to have another name attached to their list, don't recommend it, but it works. And so I'm for whatever works.
Right. Very good. For a healthier population.
Exactly.
You're going to put yourself out of business, doctor. Be careful.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Unfortunately, childhood obesity is on the rise.
Okay.
And that leads to very early diabetes.
Right. Well, we are glad that you are here in our community providing these very important services. And thank you for coming in to talk to me about all the work that you are doing. And we hope you'll come back.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Great to have you
here.
Go
walk.
Go walk, everybody. That's true. Dr. Kathleen Collarin, my guest here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.